ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 स्वजनाद्वाविनादिषु जातिना समं पश्यन् सर्वेषु अर्थम् इवात्मनः।
Udasina.
What does Udasina mean? From the 12th chapter of
Renunciation.
Yes. Unattached or neutrality. Remaining indifferent. Udasina remaining indifferent.
Samam.
Equally.
Pashyan.
So, seeing. Saveshu. What is Saveshu?
All living.
In all of these.
Artam.
Purpose.
Purpose.
Siva.
Like.
Atmana.
Atmana.
Of oneself.
Of oneself.
So jaya patya griha chetra. So to one's wife, jaya apatya, to one's children, griha, to one's home, chetra, to one's, yes, shakra, relatives and friends, dravina, this is the heaviest of all, bank account, adishu, means and so on, adishu, and so on, that means If Lord Krishna himself was speaking this verse, has missed any of our attachments in his list over here, this covers it by saying, and so on, and all the rest that we're attached to. So that's wife, children, home, lands, relatives, friends, and bank accounts, and everything else that we're attached to. Instruction is, the next word is what? Udasina, remaining indifferent to these things. Saman pasyan. Saman means not luggage. But equally seeing these things. Salvation and all of these, artam, purpose, Eva and Atmana, oneself. Here's the translation. Please listen carefully. One should see one's real self-interest in all circumstances and should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on. Please repeat. Maybe we should repeat it every night before we go to sleep and every morning when we wake up. One should see one's real self-interest in life.
One should see one's real self-interest in life.
In all circumstances.
In all circumstances.
And should therefore remain detached.
And should therefore remain detached.
From wife.
From
children.
Children.
Home.
Land.
Relatives.
Relatives.
Friends,
wealth,
and so on.
So
notice in these words spoken by Krishna himself, the Supreme Lord himself, he's making a there's two statements in the English translation. One is to see one's real self-interest in life. So that is, in one sense, an obvious point, because that's what we do all day long. We're looking after our self-interest in life. And then, he says, as the translation goes, in all circumstances. So what does in all circumstances add to the things? One should see one's self-interest in life, one's real self-interest in life, in all circumstances. What does it add to the sentence? Distress and misery. What else?
Happiness.
Whatever the situation is, whether it's dark or light, day or night, whether we are wealthy or poor, whether we are sick or healthy, whether we are young, whether we are old, in every circumstance, this is another example of a circumstance.
Disease.
That we mentioned already. In health or sickness, whether our ENT specialist is here or not. What's another type of a circumstance? Yes.
In all actions and reactions?
Yes, whether we're getting good results at the moment, whether we're getting bad results at the moment, whether we have hair or we don't have any hair left, whether, I mean, there's unlimited different circumstances, whether we're tall, whether we're short, whether we are male or female, whether we're being good in class or we're preparing to be naughty in class. Sit properly, or else you can't sit in front. And put away your flashlight. Does anyone have any rope? The easiest way. You can sit right here. That will be best. You can bring your seat so you don't get cold. You sit right over here. And if you sit over here, then you can be a little bit naughty. Over here. That's actually even a better place. Because it's too hard to be there. Then I can still see you. Okay. Now you can give him back his flashlight.
He'll keep flashing everybody.
And everyone. No. Yesterday we had an exchange and we understood that there are certain times we have to be very good. Stop leaning on that. Fold your hands. Quickly. Fold your hands. I'm going to be watching you. And look, you're sitting on the Lord Balaram. And you've got a flower in your hand. So one should see one's real self-interest in life in all circumstances, regardless of what those circumstances are. Because we all tend to hear philosophy, we repeat it very enthusiastically when the verse comes, but then we tend all to think that, well, my circumstance is a little different. And therefore, I don't have to follow this specifically at this time because of one reason or another. And Krishna himself, who is speaking these words to Uddhav, is saying all circumstances, every circumstance, each and every circumstance, and what should be done in each and every circumstance, it's an obvious point. And no one will argue with this point, is that one should see to one's actual self-interest. Who will argue with that? Who will argue with that point? One should see to one's own self-interest in every circumstance in life. It's the next part that we'll argue with. Because in this world, it is very difficult to actually understand one's self-interest. One's real self-interest, because we tend to assume our temporary self-interest is our real self-interest, when real implies eternal, actual, factual. Our actual eternal self-interest is beyond the particular interest of the circumstance that we happen to be living in right now. From the body, from the time we happen to be living in right now. Because all of those, if we place all our energy into all of our energy into our temporary circumstance, by definition, it's going to change, it's going to shift. How many of you live in a rented house? How many of you would use your hard-earned money to fix up the house and invest your hard-earned money into your rented house? Raise your hands. I want to see if anyone raises their hands, because it's these kind of people that I will sell the Westgate Bridge to later on, looking for clients. No one will do that because we're only temporarily there. But we will put our energy into that which is actually ours. We spoke about this point yesterday. What is actually ours? Actually, everything that we can take with us when we leave this world is ours. So therefore, in all circumstances, one should try to understand first, foundationally, primarily, what is actually mine, what is actually my self-interest. Because in this world, we become so bewildered. We become so bewildered by our own desires, by the modes of passion, by the modes of ignorance. We cannot clearly discern what is our self-interest. We cannot even understand who we are, what our self is, who our self is. So if we can't understand who we are, the difference between what I am, who I am, and what I am not, how will it be possible for me to understand my self-interest if I don't know who I am? So therefore, the first thing that Krishna, practically speaking, teaches in the Bhagavad Gita is that we are eternal souls. And to look after me, the eternal soul, that is actually my self-interest. Not that we can't deal with the temporary world. We must deal with the temporary world, that which is not eternal. We must deal with it in a practical way. We must deal with our temporary natures within this particular body in a temporary way. It's like, I won't invest all my wealth into my rented flat, but I still need something in there so I can live in a comfortable, practical way. So similarly, we have to deal with the material world in a practical way, in a practical way. But if we invest all our energy into acquiring a comfortable situation in the material world, we will only become frustrated, because that is not possible. It is not actually possible to find a comfortable position, a secure and comfortable situation in the material world. And it always seems to be just over there. And the nature of the illusory energy of Krishna is that we're always thinking the if only I could do this and move that around and manipulate this, and this person was just over there and that person was a little bit closer, then my situation will be better. But the material world, this we can count on, that the universe will not cooperate with our desire to control it in such a way that we will find a peaceful, secure, fully satisfying situation. When we're very young, perhaps 6 or 12 or 13 or maybe up to 16, we dream, oh, my life is going to be like this and I'm going to have this and this kind of car and that type of a wonderful family and children.
Fold your hand. Oh, you are folding hands.
Such a nice devotee. Such a nice, peaceful devotee. And children who always do just what I say. And a job that's perfect. Which means they pay me and I don't have to go in or do anything. And I will live forever. So obviously, this is not possible in this material world. Because those who we love, the people who we love the most, and we only wish well for them, they too must leave this world. Everyone's body in this world. It is a complete holocaust in time. Time factor, kalosman, lokachaya, kri Krishna says in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, this is kalarupa, time. I am. And I come to destroy everything and everyone in this world. So therefore, knowing this simple, unavoidable fact, we have to think very carefully. How should I spend my time? Because I too am in this world temporarily. And what is the best use of my time? What is my true self-interest? So a sober, a wise person, dhira tatra muyate, he considers these things and doesn't become bewildered. He acts very intelligently in all circumstances to act for his actual self-interest. And although so much of this type of thinking that Krishna is speaking to Uddhava sounds so negative, but it is negative only because we have undue sentimental attachment to those things which we can never truly possess. And because we can never truly possess them, they cannot be the source of our happiness. So therefore, this type of jnani type of preaching is required so that we see the very nature of the material world and give up again our undue, overly sentimental attachment to it. Because it is that attachment that causes us the trouble, the misery, dukkha. Because it's anitya, asukha, lokam. Krishna himself certifies it. But just like when every cigarette package has certified on it. And it's very interesting how they changed the type of certification. Previously, there was nothing. And then they put on it warning, smoking cigarettes may be detrimental to your health. And then they increased it to warning, cigarette smoking will cause you heart disease, and it will cause you cancer, and it will cause you this problem. But why do they keep having to change it and making it more intense? It's because It's not stopping people from smoking. And now they have it in Australia. They have, you know, they have photographs of lungs and hearts that have been ruined by it. So it's certified to cause us nothing but misery, but people are so addicted to the cigarette smoking, and the government is so addicted to the taxes they collect from it, that it's such a flourishing industry despite this, because of people's foolish desires. How can we say anything other than a person who smokes cigarettes is foolish? And killing themselves and paying for it too. So the point I would like to make is this type of certification is given on the material world too. Krishna says, Dukkhalayam ashashvatam anitya sukham lokam. And yet, we are foolishly, hopelessly addicted to the things that cause us misery. Nateshu ramate buddha. Trying to combine the senses and the sense objects. But knowing, if we can somehow just get the taste, smell the fragrance of the breezes of Sri Vrindavan Dham, if that taste can come into our heart, into our consciousness, in a substantial way, then these type of verses, practically speaking, are not even required, practically speaking, except for a reminder, a gentle hint and reminder. Sit properly now, leaning like this. Because the taste of Vrindavan, and this is what the Bhagavatam is bringing us to, the smiling face of Krishna in Sri Vrindavan Dham. It's not like the residents of Vrindavan who are situated in their eternal position in relationship to Krishna. It is not that they have to be preached to and be told, don't be attached to your wife, to your family, to this, to your husband, and to your bank balance. Superficially, they even appear to be attached to these things. But actually, in fact, their attachment is fully to Krishna, and Krishna only. And because of that, they're tasting the highest limit of ecstasy in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Kaviraj Goswami Raj says that those who think, he explains Krishna's own thinking, that those who think the lover and the beloved, or myself and those who love me, enjoy equally, those who think that myself, Krishna, who is composed of Sat, Chit and Ananda, his very substance is bliss. And he says that those who think that myself and those who love me enjoy on an equal level, they do not know, they do not understand my braja. Because the residents of Vrindavan have given themselves to Krishna so completely. When Uddhav visits Vrindavan, who knows what chapter of the 10th canto Uddhava makes his visit to Vrindavan? Does anyone know? You know? He said, no. I'll give you a hint. It's right after Krishna returns from Gurukul, which is in the 45th chapter. And then, in the 46th chapter, because Krishna is not, he has said to the residents, the gopis especially, he said, Aya Sayiti Dhoti Kha, to a messenger. He has sent a message to them, to the gopis, saying, I'm coming back very soon. And because he was unable to come back immediately on the level of the Leela, he sent Uddhava to go to Vrindavan with some messages to the residents of Vrindavan from himself, from Krishna. And when Uddhava, there are more esoteric, secret reasons why Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. And the reason is that of all the members of the Yadu dynasty who were living at that time in Mathura, Uddhava was the most intimate associate of Krishna. He was the best devotee in that sense. And Krishna could speak to him about the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And the Yadavas thought, they were thinking, that we love Krishna so much, and Uddhava was the best of the Yadavas, thinking, oh, I have such an intimate loving relationship with Krishna, that he tells me different things. So, we have knowledge, and when we have a little knowledge, we tend to get a little bit proud of our position. So Uddhava, so what do we do? All we have to do if we want to get our life in perspective is we have to go to school again and learn more, and then we see how little it is that we actually know. So Krishna decided to send Uddhava back to school. And it was the school of Vraja. And he to do this, because Uddhava was the student of Brihaspati himself. But he was going to send him to school to learn from those who were infinite, practically speaking, times more great than Brihaspati. He was going to see the residents of Vrindavan. He was going to have an experience of what love for Krishna actually is. He was going to see the transformations of ecstasy that the residents of Vrindavan were experiencing due to the intensity of their love for Krishna. And that was the second reason why Krishna sent Uddhava, is because he was missing the residents of Vrindavan so much, and he needed someone to talk to about them. He needed someone who would understand what he's speaking about and why he was so captured by their love, despite the fact that he was in Mathura and that everyone loved him so much. And soon he would have 16,108 queens who loved him so much. But yet, he was thinking of Vrindavan. So what is the quality of their love that so much captured Krishna, that so much placed them in ecstasy? And their ecstasy was greater, far greater than the unlimited ecstasy that the Absolute Truth Himself, Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, greater than the ecstasy that he was experiencing. So Uddhava, Krishna wanted to speak to, he wanted to be able to reveal his heart, because Krishna is a person. And actually, this is the Hare Krishna movement, and we know that Krishna is a person. Some of you are so fortunate at this very moment you can see him and Srimati Radharani, Madhava and Srimati Radharani right now. But they are persons, and everything that that means they respond to personal things, to personal gifts, just as we respond to personal gifts. When they are given, with affection and love, naturally we respond to them. So Krishna responds to the bhakti. And he allows those who have bhakti, according to the quality of their bhakti, and their, which will mean the desires, he allows them to understand and see him according to the purity and quality of their bhakti and how much they are giving everything. So Krishna wanted Uddhava to see this, so he sent Uddhava. And Uddhava arrived in Braja just at dusk, which is a very special time in Vrindavan. And because just before dusk, that is called Golduli, when the cows are coming home and the air is filled with the dust raised by the hooves of the cows. And when Uddhava came, first, by the mercy of Yogamaya, Uddhava was able to see it. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita. He saw Vrindavan in its uppercut. What is uppercut? Unmanifested. How can you see something unmanifested, but on the spiritual level, existing, manifest, fully on the spiritual level. He saw all of Vrindavan while Krishna was living in Vrindavan, because palam ekam nagacchati, he doesn't leave Vrindavan actually, but he stays on this uppercut level. So he saw Vrindavan in its ecstasy, with every tree blossoming with its fragrant flowers, with every river flowing beautifully, filled with lotus flowers, the Yamuna with its darkest color, filled with lotus flowers, every tree blossoming, every cow and calf and bull in ecstasy, fully ecstatic blossoming Vrindavan. Because it was blossoming because Krishna was there with them. And they were offering the fruits of their existence, because every living entity, being an individual, and this is especially true for human beings, has a special quality, a special gift that they can offer to Krishna that no one else can offer to Krishna. We have an offering to make, each and every one of us have an offering to make to Krishna that's unique. That is the meaning of being an individual. We are unique. And if we look around, we see that there are no two persons dressed exactly the same way, look exactly the same way, because we're individuals. And we have our individual gift. And the perfection of that individual nature is to make that gift with great devotion, make that offering for Krishna's pleasure. So Vrindavan was in ecstasy because Krishna was present, and each of the living entities there, every person was fully engaged in serving Krishna. And then after Uddhava saw that, in a moment that vision was withdrawn. He saw uprakat Vrindavan, and then he saw prakat Vrindavan, because Krishna had left and gone to Mathura. He had gone to Mathura. And Vrindavan, without Krishna's presence on the prakat level, the rivers were drying up. No trees were giving fruit. It was just separation. He went to the home of Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, and Nanda Maharaj pulled himself, because he had come and he looked like Krishna. Uddhava would wear Krishna's remnants, the remnants of Krishna's clothes, and he had Sarukya Mukti. He looked just like Krishna. Gandharva saw him, and he pulled himself. He pulls himself from his Brahmabhava, his missing Krishna, to at least be able to talk. If one reads the 46th chapter of the 10th canto, one will see that Madhya Yasoda does not say one word. She cannot pull herself out of the ecstasy of love for Krishna, of inseparation. She can't do it. She's too deep within that ocean, that ecstatic ocean of where is Krishna. There's one verse in Padmavati, compiled by whom? Srila Rupa Goswami. Did you know that? He says, this one devotee says, separation from Krishna is better than being with Krishna, because when one is with Krishna, one sees Krishna in one place, one of Krishna. But when one is separated from Krishna, one sees Krishna everywhere one looks. Everywhere one looks, because one's consciousness. This is the nature of love. One's consciousness for a lover of Krishna is just longing to be with Krishna. There is no need to say one should look after one's real self-interest in life and all circumstances. One should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on. These type of instructions are meant for us, for me, who have turned my back on Krishna and is struggling like a fool in the material world, trying to find some happiness, some eternal happiness. Me, the soul, is longing for eternal happiness, is thirsting for eternal happiness, like a man on the desert who is so thirsty, longing for a happiness that will fill my heart. And I'm looking in the desert for that water of happiness. So these instructions are not for me, telling me to become detached from this side, but turn my back on Krishna so I can turn. I'm so attached here. We were using this analogy yesterday. I've turned my back on Krishna, and I'm facing the wall, but I'm attached to everything on this wall that I'm looking at, and therefore I'm unable to turn back towards Krishna who is over there. So therefore, to facilitate my turning to Krishna, so much instruction. Don't think you can be happy looking at this crack in the wall and that crack in the wall. And this, of course, there are no cracks in the wall. The temple is so well maintained by the careful devotees. But don't look here. Don't look at the land of shadows and expect to find substance. Don't look at the mirror image of prasadam and thinking you're going to get real taste from it. No, you have to turn from the reflection to reality. And that, of course, is one of the messages of which chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? About a banyan tree? Which chapter?
15.
Yes, that this world is a reflection. And if we keep our consciousness absorbed in the reflection, fully absorbed in the reflection, we will get reflected happiness only. We'll taste reflected fruit and samosa only. And it won't bring up, it won't satisfy the hunger of the soul, of me. So these type of instructions are meant for me. But in Vrindavan, everyone is floating, forever floating in their ecstatic, loving relationship with Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj, he welcomes Uddhava as a guest, because one must welcome a guest. He's able to pull himself from his ecstatic, where is Krishna, where is Krishna, when will he come back, how will I survive a day more without Krishna? Just thinking and seeing Krishna fully in his consciousness continuously, and Krishna did this, and here is the place. Everywhere he looked, remind him of Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. He was experiencing Krishna. He was experiencing Krishna fully. So he pulled himself from that mood to be able to greet Uddhava, and he borrowed, he fed him some like sweet rice just to greet him. He said, please sit down. He was able to do that. Mother Yasoda hadn't cooked. From the moment Krishna left, she didn't cook. So he had to go and borrow. Please give me, a guest is here. Let me, I want to feed him something. He'd go on to the neighbor next door. And Uddhava looked. And this is Nanda in Yasoda. Later on, he saw the Braja Gopis who were completely mad in ecstasy. But just looking at Nanda Yasoda, he was shocked. He was shocked to see what love for Krishna actually is. Love for Krishna means one's consciousness is fully absorbed in that relationship. That is the natural consciousness of the soul. He thought, Uddhava thought, that Nanda and Yasoda, they cannot survive one or two or three or four days more, even, because their separation from Krishna is so intense. How will they survive? And love is so, it is brightly burning. Like if you see a ghee lamp, there was one on the altar, is it still there? Is it burning? Is it on the altar? Huh? When the ghee lamp is burning, it is burning in a particular way so it can burn for days and days. But if the whole, all the ghee was being burning at once, it was all in flame, how long would it last? The Brijvasis don't hold back anything. Their consciousness is always inflamed in their love for Krishna. Holding back nothing. It is not that they're making a choice even, that I'm going to hold back nothing, now I will ignite. I will now ignite in my thinking about Krishna. No, it is the nature of their type of spontaneous love. Their Vatnika Bhakti is that they love, they have no choice. They love Krishna. In their own special mood. And this is what Mahaprabhu is teaching, actually. And he's teaching by his example, too. By his words, but by his example. How to learn to love Krishna and his direct followers, the six Goswamis. They taught in this way. Hey, Raji, Brother D, the King, Chalalite. But here I am. I'm facing the wall, and I'm thinking everything is really, really nice. And look at this little dot over here, and this little thing over here. And this, and my consciousness is absorbed in this, and this is a very good part, and this is a not good part, and I have to watch out for this. All day long, Ishatuesha Samutena Dvanta Mohena Bharata. Completely absorbed, my back turned towards Krishna, and my life is ticking away, moment by moment by moment, and I'm completely unaware of it because of my absorption in things that are not actually my my self-interest, the self-interest of me, the soul. Me, the person who is within this body, the person who was still the same person when he was...
Sit properly. Not your alarm room. Sit properly. How old are you? 5 years old? Do you know that I was 5 years old? Do you believe me or not? Yeah, it's true. It's true. I was so cute. But I was the same person. Now my body has changed so much, my mind has changed, my intelligence, hopefully, has changed. But the person, that feeling of I exist, that sense of being an individual, that remains through all the changes of bodies. What is the Bhagavad Gita verse, the first teaching of Krishna practically? I'll let you know when you can come out. 2 minutes before. Okay? Because it's, I know it's hard. When you're young, it's just so hard to sit still. And he's... And all the young men and ladies who are why it's so hard is because they haven't mastered the hypocrisy that we've mastered. Because we can sit still and our minds can be somewhere else, right? The children, when their minds are something else, their bodies start moving somewhere else. But we've mastered the hypocrisy of making believe we're here when we're not here at all. This is what it's like when you get older. You learn how to deal with the material, practical realities of life in a hypocritical way. You have to be nice to people who you hate. You have to, like that, we have to learn how to deal in the world and get attached to so many things that we shouldn't get attached to. Well, me, the soul, the person, is starving, dying for true nourishment, for the true nourishment of me. Why? Because I'm looking at the wall over there. If you were to look at the wall, when a student is bad in class, you turn around and stand in the corner and just look at the wall. That's torture. And that's all we do all day long. With our backs turned from Krishna. So, Uddhava saw the bright, burning ghee lamp fully ignited of Nandini, showed his love. And again, he had not yet even seen the love of the brother Gopis. And he thought, they're not going to survive much longer at the ghee lamp. If it's fully burning, how long can it fully burn? It will be fully consumed so soon. So he thought, but I have to diminish their love for him. But he did not know the love of the Vrijvasis yet, because he was going to school. And he was going to teach them something, but he was going to learn about love, the nature of the Vrijvasis love. So he started to preach to them that you don't know it, but your boy Krishna is not an ordinary boy. He is the super soul. He is within the heart of every living entity. Verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, this one. Second one. Third one. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Sarvasya Cham Videsara Visto. He is the super soul. His energy is everywhere. His power is everywhere.
He's equal to all living entities. He goes everywhere with all living entities. He especially goes with those who have devotion to him. Because he didn't quote the Bhagavad Gita because it hadn't been spoken yet and this that leaves, but he's reciprocating with everyone. He was trying to reduce their ecstasy by adding knowledge of Krishna's actual position. So that they wouldn't just think of him as their ordinary boy, and they would understand that he's God. He's the Ishwara, part of Ishwara. So Nandamaraj, he looked at him. There are so many verses in this 46th chapter. Nandamaraj looked at him and said, "This boy Uddhava, he is very nice. He's a little young and immature, but he's a very nice boy. And he's gone to Mathura. He lives in Mathura. And when Krishna was there, he heard so many of the Mathura Vasis talking to Krishna, saying, all the Yadavas and Mathura Vasis, that Krishna, you are the super soul. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go back to Vrindavan. You're the super soul. You have to be first of all equal. Samoham sava bhuteshu. You have to be equal to all living entities. So there's no need for you to go back to Vrindavan. And not only that, but you're the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And they saw you when you first took birth. They saw you in your forearm form. You are the super soul. You are Lord Narayan. And we know why they were telling him that, because they don't want him to go home. And this Uddhava has overheard that. And he believes them. And even Krishna is influenced by these words of the Mathura Vasis. And he's thinking, yes, I must be the super soul. After all, I perceive everything, I'm Savagya, I know everything, I've killed this demon, I've killed that demon. So Krishna is, what is the demon that Krishna has killed? Do you know? What was the first demon that Krishna, raise your hand if you know the first demon that Krishna killed. Raise your hand if you know. Who? Putana, second. Shrikavarta. Shrikavarta, in between, yes. And then, Bhakasura, on and on. So there was so, I killed so many demons. I must be the super soul. And they're always saying, Krishna, stay here, come here, meet this relative and meet relative. Just like when you go home, you get entangled in that way too. Yeah, you have to talk to this relative and that relative and that relative. You have to meet this family member in no time. So in this way, Nandamaraj was thinking, and Krishna has gotten somewhat bewildered, and he hasn't come home yet despite his promise. So when he heard this knowledge, his ecstasy and his love for Krishna did not decrease, it did not increase. He is so fixed in his love for Krishna like the ocean is fixed in its size. You add water from to the ocean, you take away the water, it doesn't increase or decrease. So he had, otherwise had an ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna. In Vatsalya. Sudha Vatsalya. And he replied, what I'm saying is from the comments of Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura. He said, Krishna has become under the influence and he won't come home. But I know Krishna's mood, because Krishna likes to please everyone. He likes to please everyone. They want him to stay and he wants to stay. This is Krishna's nature. He is soft like melted butter. And so kind to everyone, and so loving to everyone. But I will go to Mathura. I will go to Mathura and I will take Krishna by the hand and say, Krishna, you are coming home now. And then I will take him into the assembly of the Yadus. And I will say to everyone, I will read this letter. I will announce to everyone that Krishna promises that he will stay with those who love him the most. And then, in the presence of everyone, Nandamara said, in the presence of all the Yadavas, I will turn to Krishna and say, this I promise you, Krishna, that no one loves you more than we do, Vrasa. Now come home. And then Nanda Maharaj thought, oh, because it's not the nature of a devotee to think, oh, I love Krishna more than anyone. So he never went, he never sent a message or anything like that. But this is the nature of the Vrishbhasis. This is the nature of the Vrishbhasis. They have no attachment other than to Krishna. They love Krishna. They love Krishna. For one to save Krishna from one drop of perspiration, that would be a slight inconvenience to him, Mother Yasoda is prepared to die 1,000 deaths. When Nityananda Prabhu came, and Sivananda Sen, Nityananda Prabhu was a little late, and Nityananda Prabhu came when they were going to Puri, and Nityananda was very angry, and he cursed the, he said, Sivananda's son will die. And Sivananda Sen's wife was all crying, and then Sivananda came back and said, why are you crying like this? Nityananda Prabhu has cursed our son to die. And Sivananda said, let us all die if we have inconvenienced Nityananda Prabhu. Mm-hmm. Not that, of course, anyone died or anything like that, but this is the nature of love. These are the exchanges of love. They are all based on the pleasure of another. If we want to go home to our real home, to be with Krishna, we have to develop love for Krishna. We can't love the wall and want to play with the wall all day long and love Krishna. So therefore, out of his kindness, Krishna is speaking very heavy truths. One should see one's real self-interest. One should know one's real self-interest in life in all circumstances, regardless of what our condition is at this moment or in future moments or what it was in past moments. We should see our real self-interest, and therefore knowing our real self-interest, we should see the rest of our life in the perspective of that. And therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, men, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on. Because they will keep us in our back to Krishna. If we develop attachment. And this is, I haven't even begun the purport. What have I done? I haven't even begun the class yet. I was about to say, oh my God, I've come here. So I'll just read the first few sentences. A devotee of the Lord recognizes that his wife, chosen home, land, friends, and money are meant to be engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he does not frantically make arrangements for the sense gratification of his family and friends. He is not eager to enjoy the false prestige of being the master of his wife and the lord of his children. nor is he anxious to gain prestige from his friends and society, as he does not envy anyone, and he is not lazy in the matter of self-realization. He is free from the false sense of proprietorship and is always eager to develop his understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is free from false egoism and automatically turns away from useless materialistic conversation. That was the subject of one of the points in the previous verse. Thus he is steady and not whimsical, and he's always firmly situated in loving friendship at the lotus feet of the spiritual master. This is from the previous verse. And now a question. The question may be raised is how one can develop freedom from false proprietorship. How can I actually, because I have so much attachment to these things, and I'm thinking they're mine, and then for my pleasure, how can I gain freedom from this? This question should be raised, must be raised, it may be raised. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given the following example. An ordinary man is very eager to accumulate more and more money. He maintains his wealth in the form of stocks, bonds, securities, bank accounts, properties, gold, and so on. As long as these different assets are contributing to his financial well-being, he sees them equally, and he considers them as belonging to him. But if some of his assets are taken by the government for taxes, or if they are lost in unfortunate business arrangements, then he is forced to give up his sense of proprietorship. In the same way, everyone should be intelligent enough to observe that one's sense of ownership over innumerable material objects is not permanent. Therefore, one should develop detachment from these things. If one does not cultivate a loving feeling of friendship for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have to develop our relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, if all we have in our existence are these temporary material things, objects that we consider ourselves, if that's all we have, trusting, faithful, loving relationship with Krishna, and we don't actually accept or believe or trust that he's going to care for us, no matter what anyone says, we will keep our consciousness on these material things. Because we need something to get pleasure from. Someone to be in relationship with. We need that. This is the nature of the soul. So therefore, if one does not cultivate a loving feeling of friendship for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we don't have a relationship where we can offer prayers and convince that he hears them, that he and she and they all hear them, and if we don't come and give them some gifts and spend some time with them and don't feel their very sweet personal reciprocation, how will it be possible for... Okay, you see what time it is? You see what time it is? Well, when it's 9:30, it'll all be over, okay? And then you can see, that's so nice, I'm so proud of you. Oh, nice. That's a nice devotee. Not at all naughty. No, I mean to say that when you don't want to be naughty, you can fully control yourself, and I really appreciate that. And the rest of the time, I don't mind at all if you're naughty. Okay? You can be as much, because you have to let it out some way or another. I know that. But when you want to remain fully focused, you're really expert at it. I appreciate that. I spent so many years teaching. So we have to develop that friendly, affectionate relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, we will not be able to turn. We have to trust him. We have to trust that he will, in fact, care for us. So if one does not cultivate the loving feeling of friendship for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotee, or pure devotees, if there's pure devotees here, the spiritual master, one will undoubtedly be entangled by the network of material society, friendship, and love. One will then remain bound on the material platform with no hope of permanent happiness. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Now we have 1 minute left. Anyone have a 1 minute question? I mean, if you ask a 1 minute question, we won't have time for an answer. So, yes, Mataji. You mean in our current situation or when something happens in life?
Uh-huh. What can you do actually unless this mercy comes to us?
But we should try our best. That's what we can do. We should desire and we should try our best. This is Mother Yasoda in Dhammapada Lila is described, the word is used, Prishrama. Her thing was always 2 inches too short. One finger represents Parishrama, hard work, and the other, Kripa. So first it was Mother Yasoda's hard work, her Parishrama, that caused Krishna's Karuna Shakti, his compassion, seeing how hard she was working in Krishna's service. And that Karuna Shakti caused the Kripa Shakti to appear and she could bind Krishna. Okay, 9:30, you're free. Go. Be naughty. Haribo, take with honor too. Haribo. He's so nice. Such a nice devotee. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Nityananda Gaurachandra ki jai. Srila Radha Balada ki jai. Srila Jagannath Balaji Subhadra Devi ki jai. Srila Radha Balada Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaurachandra Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Jagannath Balaji Subhadra Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
Jai. Jai.